I believe there's a scoring error on Wikipedia. Mark Marquez went 2 whole points-paying sessions without winning. That was quickly rectified. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. Clearly a rounding error. Like, how could you possibly get that big a mistake wrong on Wikipedia? Who knows? Welcome to episode 616 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friend and neighborhood host, Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us. And I'm enjoying this last quiet fortnight of only one major series to talk about before we're back on the grind in a couple of weeks' time once the flyaway starts up again for MotoGP as they head to the Japanese Grand Prix, where a certain rider, you could probably guess who, has his first championship points. The comeback is loading for number 93. Not the other one. If you say car rider, I will beat you to death with a controller. But it's just the bike heads on this occasion. It's me and Cameron Buckley here for the next 45 minutes to talk about all things Misano and the Grand Prix of San Marino and the Riviera Rimini. It rolls right off the tongue. It's a great name. Isn't that right, Cam?
Absolutely. You know, Mark Marquez lost just as many points-paying races in a row as I'm seeing pixels on Dre's camera right now, but you sound fine.
Good. Good to know. Good to see the internet still holding up quite well over there and across the pond as ever. But we'll figure that out as we go. But yeah, I'm here for the Italian Grand Prix. Well, not the Italian Grand Prix, really. It's the San Marino Grand Prix, technically.
One of a few Italian Grand Prix.
Yeah, we had 3 last year. We've only got 2 this year. We've come down by like 50%, but you know, we still have 2. Yeah, we're going for this Italian Grand Prix, specifically the one at Misano. And during it, an actual split in wins, but not in the way you'd expect. Mark Marquez turned out to be fuming and crashed in a sprint race. Who'd have thought that actually happened? He is fuming after all, and the Rossi fans were loving it, which led to a classic bit of internet discourse over the course of the weekend, which we'll get into. Is it okay to boo in MotoGP? Well, we'll talk about that a little bit. And we'll talk about the Grand Prix, where 2 men beat the piss out of each other for 26 laps, and in the end, Mark Marquez won again.
Back to traditions.
Yes, Mark Marquez being hounded and harassed by Marco Bezzecchi all the way for 45 minutes. Not the first time that's happened this season. Might not be the last either, but we'll figure that out as we go. We'll also talk a little bit about Yamaha and their new V4 that made its competitive debut this weekend to mixed results. We'll talk a little bit about that over the course of the next 45 minutes or so. And is MotoGP becoming F1? Is a bit of F1-ification starting to take place in the paddock and beyond? We'll have to wait and see.
You know, the loudest opinions that you're going to hear on how they're never going to watch MotoGP again are going to come from the people who are only exclusively going to watch MotoGP.
All the people
that goes.
All the people that write for publications where they're being paid to freelance for them. You never know. We'll talk about that over the next 45 minutes to an hour or so. But in the meantime, here's the places where you can find us. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We are on Twitter at motorsport_101. And if you'd like to follow us personally on Blue Sky, you can. Dre Harrison.bsky.social, cbuckley919.
Wrong Porsche. 917.
Rare mistake for me on that one. 917, how could I forget? At bsky.social. RJ is sadly not here this weekend. He's getting ready to fly out for IMSA and the Battle of the Bricks this weekend at Indianapolis. So say hi to him if you're down there in Indy. He'll be covering that.
Another 20 kilograms to Porsche Penske Motorsport.
Yep. yes, as Raptor says, he's getting bricked up as we speak. not like that. If you check us out on our website, Motorsport 101, where parts 1 and 2 of our IndyCar season review is now up by yours truly, or you can read that in your listening and reading pleasure. Let's just say I wasn't best pleased with Pato O'Ward over the past weekend, and I let him have it in part 2 of my season review on that one.
I can quickly summarize it with get your mans, get all of your mans.
Yeah, all of your mans, and you can take your thoughts and prayers and ram them straight up your arse, quite frankly, is how I would like to look at that. You read that and some thoughts on AJ Foyt, Mayor Shank, and Team Penske on part two of our season review, and part three will be out early next week, probably Monday next week. You can check that out, the final section on Andretti, McLaren, and Chip Ganassi Racing. I'm sure there's some decent drivers in that slab that's worth talking about in there somewhere. And of course, you can also check out a full review of this weekend, the Misano Grand Prix as well. You can read that review as well. And if you really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon. Now, I need to point this out as well. All written articles will also be going up on Patreon for free. I explained this on our social media earlier this week. There's a lot of malicious AI bots doing the rounds on the internet in certain countries right now. Sadly, because we can't afford a heavy-duty data plan to try and combat all of these, we've had to unfortunately block the website in certain places. We're really sorry about that. We are on MailChimp. If you want Motorsport 101, you can find us on there. If you want to subscribe via email and get our articles that way, I would say just use a VPN. You know, legally I shouldn't be saying that, but just use a VPN if it really comes down to it. The full list is on our announcement page as well. And but also just to know, all written articles will also be on patreon.com/motorsport101. You don't have to be a member. You don't even have to pay for it. They will all be free on there as well, just in case anybody else would like to read it and have an outlet and they're from one of the affected countries. So just
right.
to
if you're on Patreon and you do join for free, you do get that in your email as well, because I'm on our page still for free, and I actually got it there first before I saw it on the website.
Yes. Sometimes I do actually post Patreon stuff first. It's a bit weird like that, but, you know, that's just how I am sometimes. So, yes, patreon.com/motorsport101 for free if you are one of the affected countries that are on our block list. Really sorry about that, but it's a workaround. Until we get a hardcore resolution, all written articles will also go on Patreon for free as well. That's the free tier. You can get up to $5 back in if you want to get in and get early access to all of our content. I'll also put Part Apart free up this weekend as well for absolutely nothing. And you can also back us at the $10 level to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Raptor, Jason, and Steve are doing so right now. Thank you very much for your continued support. Thank you indeed. Right, I've set enough time blabbing. Let's talk about MotoGP San Marino Grand Prix.
Once again, the weekend boiled down to a dogfight between Marc Marquez and Marco Bezzecchi, with the Italian on pole in home soil. The pair duke it out, with Bez taking first blood in the sprint race, just as Mark climbs to the front with a sensational pass. He tucked the front. Death and taxes. Ducati tucks the front end. At turn 15, he goes down, drawing the jeers and boos of the Rossi fandom, and Mark's first DNF in a sprint race in this season. Well, in the Grand Prix, it was a similar story. Marquez and Bezzecchi pulling away in a race of their own. But Mark applies the pressure, shows a wheel, and Bez makes a mistake, running deep into turn 7 to let Mark through. And from there, it was a question of who had a bigger chair in the back to beat the other with. They traded fastest laps pretty much for the final 10 laps of the race, pulling away from Alex Marquez following behind. But Mark ultimately doesn't fold and crosses the line first to take win number 11 of the season and number 6 at Misano. And boy, were people mad about it. With Alex Marquez a distant third on that gorgeous retro Cassini Ducati. It's still a 10. A year later, it's still a 10. It gives Marc Marquez a title match point at the Japanese Grand Prix next week. The task is simple. Outscore his brother by 3 across the weekend, and he wins world championship number 9.
Wow. Not for the first time this season, tremendous fight between Marquez and Bezzecchi. I mean, this was... Look, we've come to expect greatness from Mark at this point. You know, we've run out of superlatives to talk about the fact he's won 11 out of 16 races this season and has just been generally transcendently brilliant. But it is a pleasure to watch Bez at newfound levels of excellence. That was an exceptional performance from him all weekend. Mark made an honest to God mistake. Bez punished him, won the sprint, just his second ever sprint win, his first since Assen back in 2023. And then Grand Prix, he had 99.8% of Marquez's pace. He was able to match him pretty much every step of the way. And it goes to show you, Cam, more than anything else, that Bez made one mistake in that entire 26-lap race, and it ultimately cost him a shot at the win. And that's sadly all it took for him to lose that race, because Mark essentially was flawless, and that's what got him the win.
That was the margin by which this duel turned. I mean, when they were fighting, Mark came at him early, tried a couple minor lunges, didn't really have his heart in either attempt, and then backed off a little bit, preserved that front tire, came back at him. And it was a very clear showing him wheel, but not actually going for the dive move going into turn seven. And Bez just outbroke himself. Not disastrously so, but just enough for Mark to get by. And from then on, it was a time trial. It was the two of them at absolutely 100%, wringing everything out of the bikes. You could see it in the body language of the bikes themselves. You could say it in the chunks coming off of their tires, lap after lap. They were just beating the ever-loving piss out of one another.
And 31 falls, no, 31 threes, 31 twos, back and forth. They both did a 31-2 with three laps to go, essentially.
On shot tires.
On 24-lap-old tires. They were beating the piss out of each other out there, and the gap was never really more than maybe 6 tenths between the pair of them at any given point. And they were just so evenly matched. And you can tell how much it meant, because by the time they're in the paddock after the race, they're both exhausted.
Mark collapsed and was sitting down after the race, watching the replay in the cool down room. He's saying, "I'm dead. I'm dead." Yeah.
Shoes off, suit off. Bez looked like he could have passed out at any moment in Parc. He almost basically collapsed into the arms of his Aprilia team in Parc Fermé, because he had nothing left. He was exhausted by the end of that. They put 100% of that into that race. And for all those people out there who complained that Alex Marquez didn't race Mark Marquez enough, well, there's your answer, because Marco Bezzecchi is prepared to do that. And it goes to show you as well, Cam, Aprilia are well and truly here. Like, that was an honest to God, pretty much even keel race between Ducati and Aprilia at the front of the field, and we were spoiled for it.
Yeah, I mean, still the different strengths of the bikes are apparent. There is nothing that can be done about that mid-range on the Ducati. It's just too powerful. But pretty much everywhere else, Bez could and would stay with Mark. Really, it almost came down to how they were and what we know about them as riders, and that Mark is devastatingly effective in the left-handers. The long left-handers are where he makes his money. And the right-handers, Bez could chew that gap back up. As you said, never really more than 7 tenths, and it would ebb and flow lap to lap, seemingly dependent on just who had the energy to keep going.
Yeah, there was a little period in the middle of it where TNT's confused, wondering, well, why now Mark's got the lead? Why has his pace dropped into the 32s? Mostly because Mark had gone onto the green at turn 11 three laps in a row, basically trying to figure out his new braking line and where he could go with it, essentially, because he had not been used to leading the race. He'd been following Bez the entire time, and he'd figured out, okay, here's my breaking point. And now he was going to try and have to recalibrate that. Now he was out in front. And once he figured it out, he was back into the 31s again. But every time he did, Bez was just able to go with him. It was a fascinating back and forth. And it was a different kind of intense. It wasn't a race where you're full of overtakes every 2 seconds like we get in some of the 2000s and 2010s races where people will swap around and want to lead or play a bit of possum. This was just two dudes time trialing pretty much for 26 laps, and neither could really break the other, but the man in front got the win. And I would have loved to have seen just how far Mark would have had to have gone if he'd have to have chased Bez the entire race rather than just waiting for that one mistake. It would have been very interesting to see if Mark would have had the extra to maybe pull something like that off. Maybe not. I think Bez might have won that race if he's able to stay at the front the whole way through, because where do you pass him when he's going at the same pace as you? Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, and Alex Marquez, I mean, stayed within about second and a half of that duel for about half the race. Those two turned the wick up, and he just got dropped like a bag of dirt second half of that race. He saw that and wanted no piece of it.
Yeah, he took the preservation option of saying, I will take the safe third place, thank you very much. He finished 7 seconds behind those two at the front. Just did not have the pace to stay with them, and he just took his solitary third ahead of the VR46s in the end. Also, another sprint podium for DJ Antonio, third in a row for him, which is nice to see. But yeah, I mean,
also Aprilia, that Aprilia, Dre, the lone usurper amongst the field of Ducatis, because the rest of the top five was a wall of Italian red. Pretty much swept. There's one Ducati missing, and I guess we'll get to him later. I don't know. I don't even know if it's worth reopening old wounds at this point. But, like, the concession system is working.
Yeah.
Like, Aprilia, through just relentlessly retooling this bike and innovating, because right alongside Ducati, they have been the big innovators in the aero space, in the ride height device space. I guess, again, just still lacking a little bit of that raw grunt that the Desmo has. But they are here. They are not just a threat for next year. They are a present threat now for race wins. For a title, you have to, like, Marc Marquez is going to win this shit probably 5 races early. But there is another challenger upon the horizon now.
Next year could be very interesting, with another year of Bez and Jorge Martin slowly getting up to speed. Aprilia could be a serious problem next year. Like, this feels real.
I wouldn't say Bez getting up to speed. I mean, for me, this is better than Bez in 2023. This is better. This is the best he has ridden a motorcycle. He looked like the only person who was going to challenge Mark pretty much all the way through any of race pace sessions, and he was.
Yeah, definitely. And I said, like, Martin would only get faster as the weeks, and he just needs track time.
You know what the shame is? Wasn't that far off for much of this weekend, but actually had a technical fault on the way to the grid, which then got him clipped by the new Marquez rule this year and took a penalty for it.
Yes, the new Marquez amendment, if any breach of race pre-race procedure, now results in a double long lap penalty. So Martin, because his bike stopped working on the sighting lap on the way to the grid, he had to park it in the garage. And the rules are now you take your original grid position and then you take a double long lap penalty in the race, which is unfortunate because Martin had top 10 pace this weekend. And it just, unfortunately, his race was derailed before it even really got started. Classic Aprilia. Still got to iron out a couple of gremlins here and there, but the bike certainly is very, very quick. Definitely. I mean, is it even worth talking about? I mean, there's a couple of extra side notes I forgot to mention that I think are definitely worth mentioning. Pedro Acosta, KTM actually looked reasonable again this weekend, but 3 times their chains broke off their bikes this weekend, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah. This is to kind of break this down a little bit. They brought a new swing arm, and this has been a thing on the KTM before, where they break weird stuff on the back of their bike. And the why is they actually were running a new, more flexible swing arm, because that flexibility is meant to kind of counter some of the rear tire chatter that they've had, because the rear Michelin slick is too good, as opposed to the front tire being trash. And if you can't actually get that through the bike, it shatters. It actually bounces up and down. That sling arm had so much flex that it was snapping the chains when they would engage the ride height device at certain portions of the track.
Yeah.
And then you're flying dead stick because your engine isn't connected to anything.
Exactly. Yeah, the chains weren't slack enough with their ride height device and the way it was working on the bike. And that's what sheared three of them, including Pedro Acosta, who was running fourth at the time.
Generational meme format, by the way, his motorcycle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Got off, punched the windshield, and then immediately gave it the middle finger live on the hard camera, telling the bike he was going for first.
News to me, he's on a KTM.
Yeah, first time for everything this year, I suppose. But, you know, he gave it the old John Cleland. He's going for first, said John Cleland.
But you know, it's just more of the classic KTM story of when they're good, they're pretty good. Mm-hmm. And when they're bad, they're absolutely rotten. And there doesn't really seem to be a rhyme or reason as to why. Because, I mean, we've gone to grippy tracks before and they've been able to harness the bike and make it work. And then we come here and they're completely out to lunch before the reliability issues.
Yeah.
It's just weird.
And we don't really know too much. And we don't know too much about the development path either, because they're keeping that very much under wraps. Matt Oxley's banned from talking to the technical department, and they're not telling anybody in the press really what developments they're making that have bridged the gap and made the difference.
Yep, because they do not want any of those secrets getting out, and have basically gagged everyone in the team, riders included, from talking about it. You know, there's always a certain level of secrecy and espionage in top-tier prototype racing, but they've got, like, theirs is on, like, a completely different level.
Indeed, and, you know, Enea Bastianini's crew chief is just gone as well. He's going to be Toprak's crew chief next year over at Pramac Yamaha Racing. Apparently fallings out internally as to the path of development, and that's Bastianini's crew chief gone. Great. It wouldn't be like
KTM.
Is
there anything good about KTM right now outside of the squishy bits that ride the motorcycle? Anything?
They're still here. That's a plus.
For now.
You know, maybe not next by the end of next year, but we'll have to wait and see. So that's not great. Also, Pekka Banyaya, 0 points on the weekend.
I am living a nightmare. Two meme formats, one weekend. We're so back, Naya. It's so peck over. Saw that on the socials, and, you know, I don't think it could get more correct if you tried, because every weekend, he thinks he's got it fixed, and then it isn't, and then it is. And even when it is, it's still not great because he qualifies so poorly. Look, being Mark Marquez's teammate has got to be its own special kind of hell.
Eh.
But forget that. He was worst Ducati pretty much all weekend.
Yeah.
That is, for a two-time world champion of this sport, that is... It's like we're discovering newer, rockier bottoms every session. With Bagnaia, I don't know what the fix is, because if I knew the fix, I'd be getting paid for it on the Volkswagen Group's dollar. It's even at the point where GD Delinea is kind of right there with him. Like, look, we're out of patience, just like the fans are. We don't know what to do. He has to help us help him.
And that's the problem. He's not built like that as a rider. He's such a Goldilocks talent that he's so specific about how he wants his bike to be that he can't be useful, because he doesn't even know what's making it fast. When it's getting to the point where Mark is telling him, forget about the engine. Like, forget about that. Figure something else out.
Ride the damn motorcycle.
Ride the damn motorcycle, and then we'll figure out the rest later. And, you know, he's now got Casey Stoner in his corner now trying to figure out, you know, where he can go from here in terms of development. Apparently,
all Casey Stoner is going to do is tell him to shut the traction control off.
Yeah. Don't be scared, homie. In the style of the Diaz brothers. from the UFC. Don't be scared, homie. Just put your foot down.
This weekend also put an end to the, Pecco isn't crashing enough thing. Well, no, he tucked the front in the race.
Yeah.
Running in a not particularly great position. It's just spiraling with no real end in sight right now. The test after the race, he was running GP25 with GP24 parts. And it's the same story again. Oh, we think we found something. Well, the proof has to be in the pudding at some point. But this is completely untenable. This cannot continue.
No. And they've got a whole another year like this potentially together where this may or may not work out. And, like, I do wonder how much of this is just Pecco in his own head. Like,
Look, Digi Antonio's getting results out of that motorcycle. Mark Marquez is Mark Marquez, and he's going to get results out of whatever you throw under him at the cost of his own health. But I just don't know. I don't know where they go from here, because even when it's fixed, we go to the next round and it's not. He's spiraling in his own head.
Yeah, and everybody's just kind of fed up with it now at this point. We've had 16 rounds this season, and they still can't figure this out. It's just making everybody upset, annoyed, and irritable. And this is the most successful rider in Ducati's history. 2 world titles, 30 Grand Prix victories. Arguably the second most important rider Ducati has ever had. And all of a sudden, they're man that won 11 Grand Prix last season, the same that Marquez has right now, this season, can't figure it out. Something has gone catastrophically wrong here, and no one knows what it is. Shit's wild. It's
worth noting, Mark also just matched Andrea Dovizioso's total for victories on a Ducati. In one season with the factory. So he only picked up a couple last year on the GP23.
Yeah, like, was it three? Because he won Phillip Island.
Three Grand Prix wins.
So, Dovi, in all that time he was at Ducati, including being a championship runner-up three times, only won 14 Grand Prix in that tenure. And Mark's matched him already.
That's horrifying.
Steve in the chat says, swap Pecco for Digia? I mean, you could do that, but Digi is still behind Pecco in the championship. There's no guarantee that's an improvement. You know,
The R46 have been super up and down this year with both riders. So I don't think it's specific to the bike, because we know how consistent the 24 is, and Franco Morbidelli's all over the fucking place.
Mm.
We cannot become Red Bull and just say one more other rider will fix it. It is going to be important. It's going to be something that Ducati prides themselves on as engineering, at that side of the garage, to try and get Pecco the help he needs. I just don't know if they can or not. I think people deeply underestimate the loss of Jorge Martin's data and how much those two beating the pants off each other and having another... years. Well, not just that, but also having another effectively secondary factory team in Pramac with factory money and factory bikes and factory engineering behind them. You have that data set to then feed back into yourself as well.
Mm.
Mark doesn't care. He's just going to go beat the fucking piss out of the motorcycle to get lap time out of it. It's what he's done his entire career. But Pecco is a lot more sensitive to how the bike rides and what he needs. We've talked about it. Ultimate Goldilocks rider. Well, right now the porridge is, it's so overdone, it might as well be congratulations.
That works too. I mean, to talk about one of the bigger points of the weekend, Cam, for a moment, when Marquez crashed at turn 15 during the sprint on Saturday, Dorna literally cut to a flock of the Rossi fans in the back in the back grandstand, cheering, hollering, giving the middle finger,
quite literally jumping for joy.
jumping for joy at the idea of Marc Marquez crashing in a sprint race to gift-wrapped Marco Bezzecchi a comfortable sprint victory in the end. And it got a lot of people talking on social media about the whole idea of, is it okay to boo during a MotoGP race when a rider crashes? And I think it's another classic extension of the Marquez versus Rossi fan base beef that's been going around now for, God, what, a decade
now?
It's
a decade. It's going to be a decade.
We're getting pretty close to 10 years of this shit now. You know, how do you feel about it, Cam? Is it okay to boo a rider in MotoGP when they're doing shit like that? And just how do you feel about it all in general? Because I wanted to touch base with you on this because I think it's an interesting topic.
I mean, I would counter that with, does it really matter if it's okay or not? Because people are going to do it anyway. I mean, we've been here for 10 years. This beef got was started out so toxic. We had Rossi fans invading the private home of Marc Marquez. Right?
Yes.
We had government officials issuing statements on motorcycle beef. Like, Verstappen v. Hamilton never got that toxic. Thank God for that.
I mean, we had to settle a death threat for Nicholas Latifi for having a completely innocent accident. But, you know, that's not okay either, for what it's worth. But, you know.
No, it isn't. But, like, at the end of the day, fans are going to behave like fans. And what is the classic Dre Harrison take on sports fandom?
I've always said for many a year, as someone who watches many, many sports in my free time, sports fandom is built on a very healthy foundation of hatred. Good old, clean, old-fashioned hate.
We have a college football rivalry described as such officially.
Yes. Georgia Tech.
Does anyone watching Dallas Cowboys versus Philadelphia Eagles really care beyond beating the other guy and hating?
Nope.
Hateration, holleration.
All up in the dancery. I mean, exactly. that's how it's always been.
We've been here for 10 years, and unfortunately, through Marquez's own actions when things were just starting to cool off, Argentina, was it 2018?
17-18, yeah, with the rampant comeback and basically plowing into the side of Rossi's bike.
Red mist in its purest form. Fans are going to act like fans. I actually think Rossi's own, because we got a cut of Rossi's reaction to it, and he seemed reasonably measured. Conversely, his right-hand man was quite literally jumping for joy next to him.
Yeah,
you're not going to stop the booing. This is going to be something that Marc Marquez is going to hear in Misano every year, despite the fact that he's wearing red, despite the fact that he pulled the Messi on the podium. Like, I'm wearing red. Hold this L. Phenomenal, by the way.
Glorious celebration. Glorious.
Hey, I'm number one. The discourse around it seems to be very much for or against it. I kind of just don't care. It's an inevitability to me.
I mean, me and David Emmett had a back and forth on this on Blue Sky during the race weekend, and I said to him, if you're a God-given Valentino Rossi fan who has hated Marc Marquez for the last 9 years because of how he's gotten down and his role in how their beef broke out, what's a tenth, really, at that point?
They're not going to change their mind at this point. Davide Tardozzi,
God willing,
he's with us. He's wearing red.
He's wearing red.
And look, he won on the red bike, on the Italian bike. There were plenty of cheers in that crowd still.
Mm-hmm.
You can't drown those out with the booze. But beyond that as well, like, Marc Marquez said it best. I do my talking riding the bikes.
they define themselves were the words he said to describe the people that were booing him during the sprint. He doesn't care. In fact, if anything, booing Marc Marquez makes him ride faster. He openly admitted he had a, quote, special fire in the belly during the race to go win that one after crashing in the sprint and hearing the reaction that went down.
Hey, that was a revenge tour of a Grand Prix, that was.
That was, no, here's 100% of my power as a comeback, essentially. and look, my thoughts on this are pretty simple. It's two fan bases that are trying to claim the moral high ground. The whole idea of hate is cool, actually, and booing someone. I would never boo a rider who crashes in a race. That's just not my personality, quite frankly. But these are people that have paid their money to go to a sports event, and they have a God-given right to voice their displeasure. That's the beauty of free speech. You're allowed to do that. You know, I draw the line at personal insults and of that nature. I think that is a step too far, personally. But you're allowed to boo someone at a sports event, and I've given up that fight to try and say that maybe we shouldn't do that, because you will never be able to convince someone of abstaining from that God-given right. We saw it with Verstappen and Hamilton, people burning caps in the stands and having defamatory posters. And even when the drivers said for them to stop, personally, Max said it was ridiculous in Hungary that one year, and Lewis said it was classless. Didn't stop them. Doesn't stop people making podcasts about how everybody else is the enemy, or that, you know, this fan base is toxic.
Fans who their own drivers that they're supporting are, practically speaking, ashamed to have them.
Yes.
Because, you know, you give that person a bad name. Just as well, if nothing else this weekend for Mark, I love the book that Matt Oxley still can't put to print because Mark hasn't won the title yet, which I think is hilarious. On the front, it says Mark the Magnificent. On the back, it says Mark the Merciless.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's so perfect. And it's him when he was a kid grinning at the camera.
Oh, yeah.
It's too perfect.
We all knew.
Yeah, he made them pay on Sunday. And really, that's what matters.
It does indeed. It does indeed. Before we get into the last major point of the episode as well, Yamaha brought their new V4 engine down via Augusto Fernandez, who's their wild card. Signed the new 2-year test rider contract to stay with the team through 2027. He was the first man to debut the new competitive V4 package. Chunky boy, striking bike, if I feel you say so myself. And what did you make of it across the weekend, Cam?
It's weird. The inline four motorcycle Grand Prix bike is dead. Feels really weird to say.
Mm.
It's getting there.
It's on life support.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it debut the day before actual competitive running. It still looks like a Yamaha, but with it being a V4, much narrower bike in the center section, but also much longer raked bike, you know, raked basically nose down for that sort of drag bike effect. And there's a lot of really neat details on it. Really neat work in the frame, neat work in the swing arm. The aerodynamics look very well integrated, whereas up to this point, especially on the Honda, which is also kind of getting there, it looks very tacked on, let's say.
Yes.
This is a very integrated bike. The two big things to look at it with this. One, they can't run this with their Grand Prix riders, and that's for two reasons. One, you're homologated a couple of aero sets in that set of concessions. Yamaha has used all of them, so they can't run that narrower cross-section lower fairing that you would want to run with the V4, because it's a narrower engine. You also have a homologated gearbox, and that's going to be completely different between a V4 and an inline four. They can't run this with the Grand Prix riders. It just won't pass scrutineering. There's also no data. I need to make that quite clear to the listener. A V4 from an inline four is a brain transplant. Every element of how you set that bike up, every detail in its construction is going to be built around the strengths of the V4, the power, the get up and go out of corners, as opposed to holding and maintaining the smooth lines through corners that for so long defined the Yamaha M1. They have no data to go on. other than a couple downs across the weekend, not a bad debut. Just over a minute off of Mark in the race, but importantly, Fernandez had a start procedure, which caused the penalty for him. Was it a double long lap or a single? I believe it was a double.
Double.
So realistically, to be less than a minute off on debut, that ain't bad.
Not bad at all, especially because after, I think it was half distance, they had the fuel warning light come on, so they had to manage their fuel load for the rest of the race. It was a severe electrical problem, so they had to mitigate and manage that the whole way home.
Which defeats the whole point of having the V4 and that extra horsepower as well, so...
The quarterfinals, what stood out to me as well, they were 1.2 seconds off pole position, which is less than 2%. That's pretty good going for a first ever running of their package and what they have. Augusto Fernandez loved it. Jack Miller had his first test with the bike on Monday. He appreciated
V4 expert, Jack Miller. V4 He's running Hondas, KTMs, and Ducatis.
Yep, he knows his shit. He says he likes it. He likes the potential of it and where it's going. Fabio Quartararo hated it.
Of course he did.
Oh. But I need to point out, Fabio Quartararo does not know how to develop a motorcycle.
Not even a little bit, because everything he asked for with the inline 4 M1 blew up in his face. So, we'll see. It's very early days. I don't think there's anything to particularly take from it other than it ran reliably.
Which is good.
Augusto Fernandez is already basically on Alex Rins's pace, and I know that's not a lot to write home about, but also Alex Rins is a full-time rider.
Yeah.
It could have been a heck of a lot worse. It also makes a great sound.
It does. It's a very nice sound.
Very few things better in this world than a Leader V4.
Yeah.
We'll see. Everyone got a chance to test it. Because of the class of concessions they're in, they get to keep running it near as enough unlimited off the track and with their Grand Prix riders. So now comes the question for 2026. Which do you pick from? I guess we'll fight and find out.
It has to, the way everybody's pulling it has to be the V4. You just gotta bite the bullet and run that shit and get as much track time as you can. Use this off season. You've got two big tests coming up. You know, just get as much data under your belt as possible.
And this is the rock upon which you build your church for the 850cc regulations.
Yep.
And just as well, like, they're gonna have opportunities to test as well, because they can, like, we've already seen Ducati maybe experimenting with the 850 aero because it's going to be heavily reduced on the front of the bikes.
Mm-hmm.
They showed up with a test bike with massively cut down wings. Such is Ducati's advantage over the field that they can afford to do shit like that with Michele Pirro.
Indeed.
If you're Yamaha, you get as much test data on this engine, as much test data for the aero, and those big, beautiful Pirelli tires. And you go all in for that next regulation set. And that has to be your foundation.
Yeah, to clarify as well, Pirelli had their first major test for MotoGP for 2027 when they take over as tire supplier this weekend. And what they did was they had bikes with less fuel, they had reduced power output, reduced aero and downforce on the frames and the fairings as well, to try and basically simulate as near as they can what they think the 2027 regulations might look like, basically. And they had a full sprint race simulation as well as obviously extended running throughout the day. Not a lot of information to take away from it right now, but certainly an interesting idea that they're trying to already think about 27 and what it may look like when by the time these new regulations arrive. So certainly something to keep an eye on as these tests go on. Sadly, not a lot to take from it because it was all very secret, not a lot of photos taken and all of that. The definition of a private test.
I think we saw like one pick of Taka Nakagami testing, and that was basically it.
Yeah, not much at all. Last note, and this is something that I will give Mr. Van Man of the Races credit. He reported on this first over the course of the weekend, that there are rumblings internally about the way MotoGP is going to be packaged and basically broadcast and sold in the coming weeks, months, maybe next season. This included, you may have noticed if you were watching the race this past weekend, there was a pre-race ceremony. All the riders at the front for the national anthem, basically a carbon copy of Formula One. All the riders are going to be front and center for the national anthem. There'll be fines if riders skip out on this. Starting at a whopping €500. Very expensive. They've ripped that straight from Formula One, the pre-race podium, pre-race ceremony, I guess you could say. It's not a podium, but you know what I mean. Also, there is talk that Moto 2 and 3 are going to be moved around in the paddock. They're going to be sent to the back, with a lot more of them going to be in temporary tents and garages, so that the MotoGP side of things, like the hospitality units, and then the cars and trucks in that part of the paddock, get priority and get more space to play with. Also, they are considering shaving down TV time for Moto 2 and 3 going forward, to make more time and have a bigger TV window for the main broadcast of MotoGP. You may have already noticed, in fact, if you watch Moto 2 and 3 now after they qualify, in Parc Fermé, they are no longer interviewing the top three after a qualifying session. They're going straight to the back now, as opposed to, you know, like Jack Appleyard holding up a microphone and interviewing them for a moment before they, as part of the broadcast. They stopped doing that now already. And apparently that might be them trying to shave time off the broadcast so that MotoGP gets more airtime in the future. There's been a lot of debate and rumbling that this is MotoGP copying Formula One's model now under Liberty Media, and that people are, you know, they're making movements to make MotoGP even more of a center focus of the broadcast compared to the other classes now. What have you made of that, Cam? Because I've got a lot of thoughts on this.
That it feels like exactly what it says on the tin. Liberty Media has control, and they are exerting the model that they've already seen works. And that is making the big class, the only class that they care about. What are your thoughts on it?
I'm kind of in two minds. I'm in two minds because a part of me empathizes with the lower categories. And the reason why I say that is because in the history of bike racing, we've always taken Moto 2, when it was the 250cc class back in the day, and the Moto 3 class back when it was the 125cc class. I've been a bike fan long enough to remember those days. We all knew that they were used as a ladder to get to MotoGP, but they were also treated with the reverence of them being standalone world championships in their own right. If anything, riders came up through the classes slower back then. Like, Danny Pedrosa won three world championships. Yeah. Jorge Lorenzo had multiple world championships in the lower categories and didn't move up straight away. Max Biaggi, I want to say, was a four-time 250 champion. He had the prestige of winning and sticking and winning a title on that bike multiple times over. But to him, it was an honor to be able to win that championship multiple times. Nowadays, people sticking around after they've won a world title is very rare. Like, Manu Gonzalez might do that next year. Johann Zarco did it. Tito Rabat did it. That's about it.
It's kind of viewed as a slight. Like, hey, you're not good enough to go up to the big boy class. And really, I think that changed really middle of the 2000s, where, like, structurally they went from being, again, MotoGP championships in their own right, or motorcycle championships in their own right, where you had manufacturers with full manufacturer support for certain teams. You had specific bikes for specific riders where, I mean, Danny Pedrosa was Honda's golden son in that class. And they had really developed what was at the time the NS 250. It was still a two-stroke. around him, just as well as they will have developed the RC211V around people like Nicky Hayden in the mid-2000s. So really, in the modern age, it's kind of converted over to being much more spec, much more specialist in terms of who provides the motorcycles with makers like Calix and Buscanaro. It feels like now the governance of the classes is now catching up with the fact that manufacturer interest kind of just dried up and disappeared as it all poured into the top class. And the top class has the names that we care about, like Honda, like Ducati, like Yamaha, the brands that people are super passionate for, that just Moto 2 and Moto 3, you know, since they became their current iterations, just haven't really had. And that also includes sponsorship dollars.
Yeah, it's understandable that those two paddocks are pissed, because it's less screen time, less air time, less chance for them to have sponsor acquisition, less activations, and they're going to have to resort to taking on pay riders to fill out those seats so they can actually make some bread, because it's not very profitable to be a Moto 2 or Moto 3 team at the moment. You're not making money. You're barely keeping your head above water. You want to be a meritocracy by hiring the best riders, but you may have to take shortcuts and higher paying ones, because right now, if this keeps up and your airtime and coverage gets shrunk and reduced, you're not going to be able to generate the money to keep yourself afloat. Now, that sucks on the one hand. Now, this is where I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit here, because on the other side of the coin, does anybody on a mainstream level care about Moto 2 and 3? They don't.
No, it hasn't been that way for a long, long, long time.
Moto E is dead, effectively, at the end of the year. That's going to also be on hiatus because people are not buying electric motorcycles. And unfortunately, despite there being some quality riders there like Jordi Torres, Hector Garzo, Matteo Ferrari, these are not people that are captivating others into going out of their way to watch Moto E, which is a shame because it's a great series. It's a genuinely fun series.
The product is great.
The product is great, but if you act like you don't care at Dorna about promoting it, how can you expect fans to care about that? The stark reality is that in Formula One side of the fence, people don't care about the juniors on a mainstream level. We are the 1% of the 1% that cares about Formula 2 and Formula 3 and that road to F1 ladder.
I don't care
about
Formula 2 myself.
Yeah. You know, and I don't blame
people. Proof in the pudding right here.
Exactly. So we're already talking about niches within niches. So the reality is that if you're going out of your way to watch MotoGP, then chances are you're probably just going to focus on the premier class. And it's understandable that Liberty Media are going to focus on what makes them money, and they're going to use a model that has objectively worked for them in Formula One. Say what you will about Formula One, it's in the best place it has ever been as
it's
a sport
working.
Right now. It is working. The value of the sport has objectively gone up. The TV ratings are better than they've ever been. They've got an 11th team on the way that's going to add even more Despite their best efforts, they got there in the end. They're going to have an 11th team that's going to generate even more money for them and even more value. There's fans that are piling in, a new generation of fans that have tuned in to watch them. They got a shot in the arm via Drive to Survive and reality TV and social media. Because I saw Matt Oxley wrote an article about this midweek saying that the MotoGP riders are saying they're already fed up with the amount of work that they got to do outside of a race weekend, and that they're close to breaking point. And Oxley writes this piece about how they need to lawyer up. And my thought was, you can't have your cake and eat it too, fellas. If you want to be...
You got
to
grow the sport somehow.
Yeah. If you want to grow this game and you all want to be worth more and you all want to make money, you're going to have to accept you're going to have to put in the work. Do you know how much PR, marketing, brand activations, Formula One drivers, even on the lower level, they're doing race weekend, in and out? Tons. Days worth. And because their model has realized that the drivers are the stars, and the more the drivers are involved, the more star power they have and the more people care about them. Even on the lower level, even the Franco Colapintos and the Pierre Gaslys of the world, like, these guys are cared about now more than they have ever been. And I think MotoGP has been living in a bit of a bubble for the last 10, 15 years because it gets 1/20th of the traction that Formula One does for them to realize, yeah, if you guys want to be stars, you're going to have to put in the work. This is not going to be as simple of... Look, we all love MotoGP's racing product, brackets, mostly, even if it was better a few years back, close brackets. That alone is not enough anymore.
How many times has IndyCar proved that? And IndyCar's racing product is not in a great spot at this point. If a 10 out of 10 race happens and no one watched it, did it really happen?
Right.
Like, so... They have made it very clear, and one of the reasons, I'm sure, why Dorna tied up with Liberty Media is to go experience some of that growth and get some of that money that F1 is rolling in. And the way to do that is to pivot to the way F1 works. And it is working, as much as I disagree with some elements of it. And yeah, to pivot back to the smaller classes, the last time mainstream motorcycle racing fans were really invested in what could be called Moto 2 and 3, let's be real here, was probably when they were trying to watch any kind of racing motorcycle where Mick Doohan wasn't leading out front.
Yeah, in MotoGP's arguably least popular era, when it was getting carpet bombed by World Superbikes and people like Carl Fogarty and Troy Corsa. Different sport back then, different dynamics than Fogarty. And this is the point that Simon Patterson made at the race, and he's right to a degree. Bike racing is more of a working class game. It's a bit more of an accessible sport compared to the elitism that reeks through Formula One. And yes, you might have to consider a different approach. But also, I need to be the guy to be blunt to MotoGP and say, you guys are a niche sport. You're a niche sport within motorsport compared to Formula One. If you want to grow this, you're going to have to do some shit you're probably not going to like. Because, like I said, the product alone is not going to sell this for you anymore. And the times when you weren't owned by Liberty Media and you were trying to copy F1's playbook did not work. You tried your own Netflix show. That didn't work out. It bombed. Like, it did not come back afterwards. You know, a lot of you guys can't afford social media teams to attack the socials like Formula One can, which has bigger budgets, are able to hire more people, etc., etc. As much as I don't like all of Liberty's tactics, and I'm fully agree with Cam on that, is that, yeah, it's not all nice, clean fun. A lot of it is stupid, and I don't like it. I can't say it's not effective. And
if it's stupid and it works, it's not stupid.
Yeah.
Says Toki from our Discord server.
Exactly. And the reality of the situation is that Liberty spent $4 billion on this sport. They're going to want it to make some money at a certain point. And if that's the case, you're going to have to do shit differently, because the model you've got right now, none of it's working. You need to do something different. And if that means taking a few pages out of Formula One's book, so be it. And don't get me wrong, I love Moto 2 and Moto 3 as much as the next guy. I love their racing and I want them to be supported. But at the same time, you don't build a successful championship sport off that kind of formula long term. That's not the reason people are watching on a mainstream level. At least that's how I look at it anyway. Right. MotoGP will be back in a week and a half's time for the Japanese Grand Prix at Motegi. As mentioned, it's a championship point for Alex Marquez. Marquez.
Not quite. I've been joined by the other Harrison brother.
Whoops. Mark Marquez has got his first championship point next weekend. He has to outscore Alex by 3 points over the entirety of the Motegi weekend. If he does, it'll be his 9th world championship. If he wins the Grand Prix, it'll also be his 100th Grand Prix victory across the classes as well. That would be quite the weekend if he pulled that off. Get the championship gear ready. And that could be very interesting indeed. We'll be back to talk Formula One's Azerbaijan Grand Prix from Baku. Will it be order or chaos? We'll roll this D&D dice to find out. And our IndyCar season review in podcast form as well. Until then, I've been Dre Harrison. He's been Cameron Buckley. Until next time, thank you very much for listening. And we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
I never stopped believing, and I won't this week.